Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
You're very welcome back. Tom, I'm with you till 453106 is the text number. That'll cost you 30 cents, or you can email afternoon@newstalk.com. Right now, it's time to learn of the goings-on around the world that haven't reached the front pages this week. Our guide as ever is Jonathan Zaburka Butler. Jonathan, how are you?
Tom, how are you getting on?
Very well indeed.
Good.
I'm at a loss to try and explain what's going on in Brazil. I've read the article, and I'm still a bit confused about the whole thing.
It's confusing enough, all right. Basically, Brazil's Supreme Court has taken two decisions against a state in Brazil. Now, the state is called Mato Grosso.
Okay.
And Mato Grosso contests that land that has been demarcated for indigenous tribes should, in fact, be theirs. And presumably what they do with that
should belong to the state.
And so presumably what they do with that land is they would then, well, let's just say they wouldn't be building parks with it. They'd probably give it to farmers and that kind of thing.
Or petroleum companies.
Could be, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it would be theirs to do what they wanted. So anyway, they didn't get the land. So they took the state agency, an agency called FUNAI, who basically look after the rights of the indigenous tribes, and they took them to court. They lost. To cut a long story short, they lost. And they're going to have to, it was decided in the Supreme Court that it was inadmissible, and they're going to have to pay FUNAI's costs. Now, what's interesting about this is that the current president, Michel Temer, who is under quite a bit of pressure domestically for various different corruption charges, was backing Mato Grosso's claims.
The states.
Yeah, basically, right. this small state against the federal state, if you know what I mean. And the reason we think he was doing that was because there was a major agricultural lobby whose support he needs in the Congress in order to get, well, to get out of a trial that he's facing, basically, in relation to corruption charges. So it's all very complicated. The case was lost, as I said, by Mato Grosso, and Temer now is turning around to this lobby and going, well, what can I do? And am I still going to get your support? So Mato Grosso are saying that they're going to appeal, but it seems unlikely that they'll win, to be honest with you.
Echoes of North America is going through my mind, and the Native Americans are driven from their land.
Yeah.
Is it a little bit like that these indigenous tribes were originally driven from their land and now even that has been taken to an extent?
Yeah, it's a great point you make there, actually. There was a military dictatorship in Brazil between 1964 and 1985, and in that period they got rid of a lot of the indigenous people from that land, who of course then came back when the dictatorship left. Now, Temer is trying to bring in a new law, and the Attorney General was actually the person who suggested this, that if these indigenous tribes weren't on the land when the new constitution came in 1988, that it wasn't yours.
But sure, the reason they weren't on the land is they've been put off it.
And that's exactly what the Supreme Court is basically saying. So they didn't point to this law directly, but what the Supreme Court did here, which I think was quite brilliant, was they basically said to the government, look, if you come with this new law and there's a case put in front of us, you're not going to win.
They sound like they're a good little judiciary.
Yeah, well,
fair play
indeed,
to them.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Morocco, figures that I literally cannot believe are real. Official figures show that nearly two-thirds of Moroccan women have suffered violent attacks, often in... That can't be real.
Yeah, you've been there, I assume, have you?
I've had a few holidays there, and it's odd. I was there with Audrey, some of our first holidays there. Audrey couldn't walk around on her own.
Yeah.
We noticed.
I've been there as well. It's a funny sort of a place because on one side it's really very liberal, as you would have seen or smelled as you were walking around, and but in the there's a lot of hissing and catcalling and all that kind of thing. But it's like you said, two-thirds of Moroccan women have suffered violent attacks, and often in public. Now, I heard your interview with that woman, the Pakistani background, yesterday, and you were, well, it sounded like you were quite shocked that these love marriages only were legalized in 2003.
I was.
Well, Morocco, up until 2 years ago, used to have a get-out clause for rapists, that if you married the victim You could get off, essentially. And that was only 2 years ago that that was kicked out. Anyway, there was the reason this has come has been highlighted is because a footage of a woman being assaulted on a bus in broad daylight. This was a woman with disabilities, was aired. It obviously got to YouTube. And these were six bare-chested teenagers who just assaulted this woman. And that caused consternation in Morocco, and lots of people took to the streets, and the government have obviously taken notice. They say they're going to do something about it. The details of that we don't know yet, but okay. It's highlighted this this problem in Morocco.
It's that whole idea of you see one incident and it's what makes your blood boil. Yep. When you hear statistics like 2/3, it doesn't have quite the same effect. Meanwhile, Lithuania, a country which may surprise you to know, but I have kind of a soft spot for it and Latvia and Estonia, because I managed to get to Estonia very, very briefly. And there are three countries that sit on the edge of the what used to be the massive Soviet Union. And you always feel their existence is, it's in the balance,
yeah.
you suspect.
Yeah, and they feel that way as well. I mean, the thing about Russia is obviously you've got the big bear to the east, but you've also got a little exclave called Kaliningrad, which is on the sea. Okay, now it's separated by these three countries effectively, but there's an awful lot of military activity in this neck of the woods. And Lithuania are very concerned about various different military exercises that have been going on there and other activities. So they've decided they're going to build a fence. Now, it's going to cost them 3.6 million euros. It's going to be 2 meters high. And most of the critics of this fence have said, well, that's not going to stop Russian tanks. Mm. But the point that the Lithuanian government are making is it's a demarcation line. So what we're doing here is we're saying if you step over this line, we're going to be calling in our mates to help us out.
And they do have tanks, and they can stop your tanks.
Oh yeah, indeed. And that's the point that they're trying to make, right. I think. So it's you know, they're saying that it's to stop smuggling and various different things, but then the foreign minister basically admitted that it was more about creating a red line for the Russians.
As we talked about Japan and the missile going over them, which gave them this moment where they really realize where they live in the world and how close they are to crazy North Koreans. But these three countries have exactly the same thing going on, don't they?
They do, yeah. And I think Estonia were spooked a couple of years ago when an official, the Estonians say the official was taken from inside Estonia. The Russians are saying, no, he was in our territory. The point about this guy is that he is now languishing. I think his name was actually something Cover. And he's languishing in a jail now. He's been sentenced to 15 years. And that happened 2 days after Obama visited Tallinn and gave a speech there saying that NATO would come to the aid of Estonia any other time. So the Russians said, OK, see how you get on with this.
So it was like a form of punishment almost for them.
Basically.
Wow. That would, again, you would not sleep easily.
Yeah, you would not.
Knowing the size of the beast that's beside you. Mm-mm. Oh boy. Yeah, that would make you very nervous indeed. Korea, speaking of which, interesting now, Korea, that this next story coming up. We would think of Korea as, you know, very South Korea, very successful economy. As everything else that goes with it, is it a good democracy?
Well, that's the funny thing because, I mean, up until I think for me, certainly, probably for you, the Olympic Games, when was that? 1988. It was 84 in Los Angeles, so 88 in Seoul. It was a watershed moment for them. You have to remember that they were, it was a dictatorship for a very long time in the South as well. And then you had the daughter of that dictator, Park, who was prime minister up until recently. And she was involved in various different scandals. And these scandals, you know, they come up every couple of months because the people involved in them have been convicted. And one of them is, in fact, the vice chairman of Samsung, one of the biggest companies in the world, obviously, a man by the name of Lee Jae-yong, 49 years old. Again, to cut a long story short, he was paying Park and a friend of hers, Choi Soon-sil, to try and maneuver government policy so he could become chairman without having to go to the board, effectively. And they were all caught. So they're all on trial at the moment. But on Friday, Mr. Lee was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Now, some people think that was very hefty. Others think it was too lenient. But it's a result. And that's the thing. And it really draws a line in the sand. And the fact that a former president, last year she was president. Now she's in jail, effectively waiting to go on trial. It's an extraordinary system.
I would tend a little bit of me to look at that as a democracy at work.
Yeah, absolutely. So would I. Yeah, most certainly. And wary of what went, you know, came before. Because in fact, this guy's father, who's the chairman, who actually is the chairman, but he's in a coma now. But he had two previous convictions for bribery and those kind of things as well.
And people are obviously going to say nothing of that sort ever happens here. On to Angola. On a corruption meter going from 0 to 100, where would Angola sit?
I'd say it would sit pretty high, all right. Yeah,
it would. Might.
Yeah, it's pretty high. And at the heart of it is the former president, Dos Santos. You know, his family, his daughter, for example, Isabel Dos Santos, is meant to be the richest woman in Africa.
That doesn't, you know, you'd have to be suspicious of that.
Just a little bit.
You would.
And the fact that he's 38 years in power.
Yeah.
Now, the big story here is that he's stepping down. He said last year that he was going to step down and nobody believed him. But he's actually gone. He did anoint a successor who seems to be a little more, who seems to be a little straighter. But I think what's going to be interesting about this is we'll see if the, I think of it as kind of the Hugo Chavez phenomenon. If a new leader comes in, he has been anointed, but is he going to be able to carry the same weight as the former leader? Or is now the moment for, you know, opposition in Angola to try and do something?
How have they managed to stay in power for so long?
I want to say through democracy,
yeah,
because they have held elections and they have been holding them for 23 years. But I would say that there's an element of clamping down on free speech and it's a bit of a police state, to be
honest. This, the daughter, Africa's richest woman, and the son in charge of a $5 billion state investment fund.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You'd have to be smelling a rat now.
Indeed.
At the very least, in the middle of all of that. On to South Africa. And this is a really interesting incident, isn't it?
Yes, it's speaking of despots, this involves Grace Mugabe, who we think might be Robert Mugabe. I think Robert Mugabe goes to the same clinic in Switzerland that Keith Richards goes to. I don't know how he keeps going. He must be getting
every time I see a photograph, he just looks the same age he was 20 years ago.
Exactly, it's unbelievable.
No advances.
Anyway, whenever he goes, it'll be Grace Mugabe who takes over. But she is a violent lady, and she was in South Africa last week. And effectively, she was looking for one of her sons, and she went into a hotel to find one of her sons, came across some models that she had heard were hanging around with them, and she attacked one of them out of nowhere, really. The lady's name is Gabriella Engels. I think she's only 20, a South African model, and she hit her with a plug. And it's quite a gash on her forehead that she got. Now, from a political point of view, you know, Mugabe, there were charges effectively brought against her. Gabriella Engels, this model, wanted to bring charges against her, but she was gone out of the country. And then it was announced by the South African government that she was going to get diplomatic immunity. Now, Engels has decided to take a case and try and get that immunity dropped. That doesn't mean that she's going to be dragged back in from Zimbabwe into South Africa.
A Zimbabwean person in South Africa at the time, so she could effectively claim diplomatic immunity, couldn't she, really?
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, the South African government are a little bit embarrassed over this. The opposition have, you know, taken them to task over it, and the deputy president basically got up in front of Congress and said, you know, this is the first time we've used it, but it seems to all be above board. But her lawyers are saying it's not, but how they're going to do that, I don't know.
Did she flee as well?
Yeah, she got on a plane and
got out. Wasn't hanging around to see if there was anything else. Next up is Tonga. And curiosity got the better of me with Tonga, and I decided to Google Tonga and discovered that it is 169 islands, only 36 of which are inhabited, and its total area is 290 square miles, and that's spread out over an area of 270,000 square miles. So everything about this spells heaven to me.
Yeah, but politically it's a nightmare. You've got a population of 110,000 spread across all of these islands, and they have a tradition of, you know, tribal politics, if you want, right? So for a long time there was the king and there was 33 families. And then around 2005 and 2006 there was a call for democracy. They tried that and it doesn't seem to be working. They're having a few teething problems, I'll put it to you this way. So the Speaker of the House went to the king and asked for the Prime Minister to be sacked, effectively. And the king said, well, okay. and he sacked him.
So the king is still a powerful person.
Yeah, the king still has the constitutional right to do whatever he wants. He can get rid of the prime minister whenever he wants. So there's a re-election, or there's going to be a new election, and that's going to happen on November the 16th. So
it does kind of strike you that, you know, even if you're put into the Garden of Eden, you're going to make a mess. Humans are just, we're determined to make a mess.
Absolutely.
We're not. Somebody has more than me. I'm not happy with it.
Indeed.
God.
That's
where James Cook hit, isn't it? When he sailed, he called them the Friendly Islands.
I think so, yeah. It was around that neck of the woods.
Heaven on earth.
Absolutely.
Terrorism, we tend to think that we're going through the dark ages of it here in Europe at the moment. It's the tip of the iceberg, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And I thought this was a very interesting story. There was 34,676 people killed in terror attacks in 2016. 1% or less than 1% of those. Now, that's not to dismiss any of the victims, of course, but less than 1% were in Western Europe. I think often we get texts in this slot where basically people say, oh, I feel so lucky to live in Western Europe. I like to think of it the other way, that these people who live in places where the majority of these attacks are happening are very unlucky,
if
that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, we shouldn't look at it as we're lucky to be avoiding this, because we're not. I mean, these things really shouldn't be happening. But the bulk of these attacks are happening in Iraq, they're happening in Nigeria and Pakistan. There was 1,100 people killed in Pakistan last year from terrorist attack. Most of them come from Islamic State. So as you said, tip of the iceberg here.
What's coming up next week?
Yeah, so on Friday, FARC are holding a congress in Bogota at the moment, and they're going to conclude. So that'll be interesting. So we'll know a bit more about its political policies going forward. Eid is starting on the September the 1st, Eid al-Adha. Yeah. So it's not the other one, which is al-Kafir, I think it is. Excuse me if that's wrong. And then on August the 30th, the Queen's Ferry crossing over the River Forth, that's going to open. There's been a good bit of coverage about that, actually. It cost them £1.35 billion.
Amazing bridges. And three different eras side by side, really engineering at its absolute peak. Wonderful stuff. Jonathan, thanks very much for
that.
You can listen back to the podcast of Around the World on news.com/Moncrief.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Back after these.